It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, presented by 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. It is the Brady and the Bunch podcast. Very, very excited for this edition because I'm used to talking with athletes that have a very, very impressive resume. Hey, this guy is a batting champion and a 10-time All-Star, and he won 6 gold gloves, and he's a 3-time World Series champion. I'm used to that. You talk about an impressive resume on a non-athlete, that's what we've got here on our TikTok Jewelers guest line waiting for us on this edition of the Brady and the Bunch podcast. So get this. We're talking with Thomas Radford, who is the owner of Thin Blue Line Canine, which is a business here in the Chittenden County area that is a dog training facility, and how he got there, more than 20 years of service in the Burlington Police Department, a member of the Vermont Police Canine Program for 20 years, an instructor at the Vermont Police Academy, a member of the Canine Hall of Fame, Canine Team of the Year with his old partner Stoney. I mean, Thomas Radford, the podcast is almost over. We just got through your resume.
Thank you very much, Brady. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. And I got so many questions on a lot of different avenues here of your career. But I also, it stands to mention that you are the stepfather of our old intern, Logan, one of our most accomplished interns, one of our favorite interns that we have had. So there's another thing to add to your resume.
Absolutely. That's probably my biggest attribute to this world.
Well, we loved intern Logan. He's killing it now at Champlain. So let me ask you about your career. 21 years in the Burlington Police Department. Did you always know that you wanted to be a police officer?
No, absolutely not. If you had asked me when I was in high school or even when I was in college, I probably would have laughed at you. I had no intention at all.
So what was it that sparked your interest?
Well, so I was a bartender at a restaurant that Rich definitely remembers, Carver's. I'm not sure if you remember that or not. But I was a bartender there, and one of my regular clients on Friday afternoons was the recruitment officer for the Burlington Police Department. And he came in every single Friday for a year straight and said, hey, I think you'd be a good police officer. I think you should apply. And for about a year straight, I said, no, thank you. I'm happy where I am. And after about a year or so, he kind of wore me down, and I decided I wanted to get out of that business. So I decided to venture into law enforcement, and it was a really good fit, and I had a great time, and felt really proud about that career, and that's it.
What qualities make a good police officer? What did he see in you at the bar on those Friday nights that he believed you could do it?
Probably the ability to handle stress. That's a huge characteristic that you need. Being a bartender, anybody that has bartended at a busy bar, and Carver's was very busy often, you really have to keep your cool. So if you can keep your cool under high-stress situations, I mean, sometimes you would have 25 people staring at you waiting for their drinks, and there was a lot of pressure and a lot of stress. And if you can keep your cool in that scenario, you probably have a good foundation to be a police officer, along with physical fitness. I'm still in pretty good shape, but I was in good shape back then. And I don't know, maybe just a hard work ethic, because really to do that job of a bartender and to handle all of the different facets of that specific restaurant, you need to really work hard.
I have friends who are police officers, and I'm appreciative of everything that they do. And look, they went to school for it. They went to school and they studied public justice, or they studied criminal justice, or some kind of forensic science. Like they studied something that helped them translate into being a police officer. It sounds like you just picked this up in your mid-20s or so. Was it hard to do that?
Not really. So a lot of people think that you need to get a criminal justice degree to become a police officer. Really, the requirements in today's world is usually that you need a 4-year degree. It doesn't matter what it's in. Or sometimes some places, you know, ask for a 2-year degree. But my degree, I went to the University of New Hampshire. I am a UVM fan now. I'm kind of a quasi fan. When UNH plays UVM in hockey, we have season tickets, and I kind of keep my self quiet during those games. But I went for communications, and so I learned writing skills, which are very important in law enforcement. You have to be able to write really well in affidavits and just the regular reports. And so that kind of transitioned over well. So you don't specifically need a criminal justice degree to become a police officer, but you do need to pass the entrance exam, which can be pretty tough for a lot of people. And as long as you pass that and you have the other requirements, then you can be a police officer.
What makes the entrance exam so tough? Is it a lot of law questions, a lot of a taxing physical test? Is it a physical, you know, exertion test? Why is it so hard?
I'll tell you the thing that gets most people is the mile and a half timed run. You have to run it in a certain amount of time. And most people can run pretty well in a mile, but you add that extra half mile and it is a killer to a lot of people. So you really have to kind of train physically to take that test, and you also have to do a certain amount of push-ups, sit-ups, and you have to have physical strength with the bench press test. So you have to have the physical attributes, but the actual written test is basic questions, not really law questions or anything like that, but a lot of common sense questions and some math questions and English questions. So you really basically have to have a good foundation of learning that most people, if you paid attention in high school and you did pretty well in high school, you're going to do well on that test. But some people take that for granted, and they kind of have trouble with that.
I ask this in a tongue-in-cheek way as a supporter of law enforcement and, as, like I said, friends in law enforcement. Do you only have to take that physical test one time? Because I got some friends who look like they could have passed it when they first started on the job. I don't think they could pass it anymore.
Well, so it depends on what agency. State police, they take a yearly physical fitness test. A lot of the other agencies, you only have to take it in the beginning. Myself, when I became a police canine handler, we were required to take it once a year, so we had to keep ourselves in good physical condition. So, you know, and it's kind of a pride thing. As a law enforcement officer, I always took pride in my physical fitness because that could save my life. So I took that pretty seriously. So I kept myself in good shape no matter what.
You know, people think of Burlington as this small area. I don't think it's as small as it gets the reputation for, but it's certainly not New York or Boston. Is it easier or harder to be a police officer in a place like Burlington as compared to New York or Boston?
Well, so I was never a police officer in New York or Boston. I'm sure the frequency of the high-risk calls is more in an environment like that, but what most people don't realize is Burlington's a pretty active place to be a police officer. It's actually, you know, when you're younger and you have a lot of energy, there's a lot of different things in Burlington that you can do as a police officer. You can do, like road enforcement, but we also have, there's a fair amount of crime in any community that most people don't realize. Because some people think that just what they read in the paper is what happens. But really, a majority of what happens on a day-to-day basis is not sent out to the newspapers because it's not really newsworthy. Hmm. So it's a pretty busy place. You know, and we have the colleges. And so every Friday and Saturday night at 2 o'clock in the morning, we have, you know, Friday and Saturday night fights. I mean, you know, you have a lot of intoxicated kids that come out of the bars, and we have to break up fights. And so really, it's an interesting and kind of a fun place to work as a police officer. There's a lot of variances. There's different types of crimes depending on what area you're in, and it can be pretty hectic and pretty busy and pretty overwhelming at first. It takes a while to kind of get used to the pace. But as far as the state of Vermont goes, it is definitely probably the busiest. It, without a doubt, it's the busiest department to work for.
You talked about the qualities that make a good police officer. You talked about the ability to kind of diffuse situations. I mean, how much patience do you have on a Friday, Saturday night at 2 p.m. when you're dealing with people who are intoxicated?
Oh, it's extreme patience. It really is. And Burlington Police does a really good job, you know, hiring exceptional police officers who have a lot of patience, and it's like I said, it's a really difficult place to be a police officer because there are a lot of different facets to it. But I think that you know, we have a lot of high quality police officers, and I was proud of my career there. I'm proud of everybody I worked with, and I feel anytime I drive through Burlington, I'm in Burlington all the time now, visiting clients, I feel very safe with the police officers that are out there protecting us all.
You know, I had Sarah George on an earlier podcast from the the state's attorney for Chittenden County, who I'm sure you've come across at some point, and I asked her these questions. I'm going to ask you also. Can you watch police shows on television now, or are they too fake for you?
I can. It took me a while. I can tell you that when I was an actual police officer, I never could watch those shows because it would be overload for my brain.
Okay.
I just had too much. It was too much. It took me about a year or two out of law enforcement, and my wife loves crime shows and watching all the live police shows and stuff like that. So I'll sit there and watch them with her. And so I kind of have regained some interest in those kind of shows. I still could probably walk away and not really care too much about it. But, I find them interesting. But for a long time, I couldn't watch them. It would be too much for me.
Do you find yourself yelling at the TV like, okay, that's not real. That's not how they really do it. Does your wife get annoyed with you that you're always correcting the officers or anything?
No, she doesn't get annoyed. She actually asked me a lot of questions like, is that really how it's done? Hmm. So like live PD and cops and stuff like that, that stuff's pretty accurate for sure. So I'm sure they'll ask me like, you know, is that, you know, why did the police officer do this or does that happen in this state and stuff like that? So I don't do too much yelling. I'm pretty calm, even keel guy, but I don't find myself yelling too much. But she does a lot of, asking me questions and I kind of confirm them. And I'm at the point now in my life where because it's behind me, I take, great pride in actually knowing the answers to a lot of these questions.
You know, I like live PD also. My girlfriend and I watch that. That's the one on A&E where it follows the offices. There's always eight counties or eight departments around the country that they're following. I had a friend tell me they didn't think that was real. A guy who's an officer told me he didn't think that was very real. You're telling me that's pretty accurate, which makes me happy, by the way.
Yeah, I always thought it was pretty accurate. But, you know, I know for a fact I have a few clients that are in the TV business, and they tell me that a lot of the stuff that we see on TV is staged. So I'm not sure how much, if at all, those shows are staged. I always thought that they were real. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I may be wrong on that. But I was always under the assumption that they were. So
no,
I may be wrong on that.
No, stop. Stick with your first one. I'm hoping that they're as someone who sits in front of the TV from 9 to midnight on Friday and Saturdays a lot of times. I'm hoping that they're real.
I would assume so. So I really would.
Tell me a little bit about the day to day of being a police officer, because I think we all, no matter what job you do, everybody has an assumption that it's always like the most exciting that it can be all the time. Like I wanted to be a college baseball coach. I thought it's great. I'm going to get to coach games and we're going to get to go to the College World Series. And then I realized it's an awful lot of recruiting, an awful lot of paperwork, an awful lot of ordering team apparel and booking umpires, etc. I can't imagine that the cop life, the police life is always as exciting as maybe we have it in our minds.
No, it's not. There's a lot of paperwork, a ton of paperwork. So, you know, if you get an arrest at the end of your shift, sometimes that can mean 4 or 5 hours sitting in front of a computer, writing up reports, doing interviews, collecting evidence. It can be a grind for sure. But, you know, the enjoyable part of the job is you do get a huge sense of accomplishment. And, you see a lot of stuff that you wouldn't see if you weren't a police officer. A lot of things that are kind of unbelievable and a lot of funny stuff. There's a lot of comedy involved, and so it can be really enjoyable. And you're out there with a team of other police officers, so you really get a team feeling. And you know, you're literally watching each other's backs and saving those people's lives on a daily basis. So you really kind of get a camaraderie going, and it spills over into personal life where you're working out together and, you know, you're doing things outside together kind of as a fun team building exercise. So there's a lot of camaraderie. It can be enjoyable, but usually if there's an event that, you know, it would be something that you would find exciting on TV, usually there's about 4 or 5 hours of paperwork right after it.
What's the most stressful event that you've had to be a part of, what that you've had to work at or cover?
I've had a few incidents where, you know, my life was put on the line.
Wow.
I had a guy that came at me with a knife once, so that was obviously pretty stressful. And I had another incident where I was stabbed with a hypodermic needle.
Oh my God.
So, you know, those kind of things happen. Anybody that's a police officer that, you know, works in any agency or any state that has a fair amount of calls for service and stuff like that, or even in the smaller towns that don't have that much going on, you know, over a 20, 25 year career, you're going to have some things happen where you're going to look back and say, you know, that could have been not so good. That could have turned out really bad.
And just the
actual driving, like, you know, when you do a code run, you're it's a dangerous situation when you're going at a fast speed with lights and siren on and you're trying to make it to an emergency to save somebody else's life. Well, you have to get there in a safe manner yourself. So that can be stressful also.
How long does it take you mentally to recover from something like that? You mentioned being stabbed, being almost stabbed. How long does it take you mentally to get over that?
So it depends on the person, to be honest with you. I was extremely lucky. You know, when you're a police officer, you see a lot of bad things. You see dead bodies. You see, you know, fatal accidents, suicides, and stuff like that. And it depends on the person, each individual person. And a lot of it, I think, depends on your DNA. And I think a lot of it depends on your upbringing. I was raised in a great family, you know, very loving, very normal family. And I had a really, really strong foundation going into that job. So to be honest with you, I never, ever had a problem falling asleep at the end of the shift over anything. And I have friends and coworkers and stuff that, you know, they would sometimes get PTSD from something that they saw, and it would really bother them. But I was really lucky. I had a really strong internal core, and I guess I just got lucky that none of this stuff ever bothered me. So it really didn't have too much of an effect. I treated it as a job. When you put on a uniform, it's really almost like, you know, you kind of disassociate yourself from your actual person when you're putting on that uniform. You feel like you have to kind of bring yourself to that next level and be as professional and as tuned into the job as you possibly can. And then at the end of the day, when you take that uniform off, then you kind of return to yourself.
I have a friend who, as I said, police officer. I got multiple friends, so I'm just referring to all of them as friends. So I have a friend who's a police officer who once gave me a card that basically said, "Hey, I know this guy who's a police officer." Would that work? If you pulled me over and I handed him that card, they say, "Oh, he's got a friend who's a cop somewhere else in the country. We're not going to give him a ticket." Would that work?
That's a good question.
And I feel like, you know,
we're all human, and you know, people forget that. So, you know, there's a famous saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. So I would have to say, you know, I would like to think that it depends on the situation. If it was a minor offense, that might help you out. But I had situations, I'll give you an example. I'm not going to give any names or anything,
yeah,
but I ended up arresting a person for DUI once who was very high up in the community.
Wow.
And it didn't matter who it was. That person was going to get arrested for DUI because they blew through like five stop signs right downtown Burlington. And by the time I made the stop, it was a very dangerous situation. And I was glad that they had stopped because I was expecting that someone was going to get seriously hurt or killed. So, and the person said, you know, "Do you know who I am?" And basically my response was, you know, "You just ran five stop signs. You know, I'm going to do my job." And it, you know, basically in that situation, it doesn't matter who it is. They committed a serious crime and they're going to get arrested. So if it's a minor offense, maybe it would help you out. But I would like to think that in today's world, most police officers, especially in today's world with everything, you know, there's a camera recording everything. So there's nothing that's hidden, basically. And I think you hear stories in the old days where, you know, a police officer will follow you home if you're drunk or something like that, you know, in the 1970s and stuff like that. I have no idea if that happened. It probably did. But I can tell you in today's world, I think that we're held to a higher standard, which actually makes our job easier because there is, you know, there is no wiggle room. And it's like, if you violated the law, then I have to do my job because I'm not going to put my own job in jeopardy by not doing my job, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How good is your human lie detector, by the way? I got to imagine in your line of work, you hear 49 lies to every one truth that you're told.
Mine's pretty good. So anytime I dealt with a juvenile, and they told me a story, I would say, okay, so what really happened? I would automatically go to that, and then they would kind of hang their head and tell me the truth most of the time. So, you know, yeah, you do get, you get lied to every single day. And, you know, just like anybody in corrections or anything like that. So you just kind of get used to it and you kind of go off your training and experience. The more you're on the job, the better you get at it. And, you know, you have to kind of go through trial and error to kind of get to a point where you're really, really proficient at reading body language and knowing whether someone's telling you the truth or not. But even in that case, there were a few times when people surprised me. I thought they were telling the truth and they weren't, or vice versa.
I'm going to picture intern Logan having a hard time trying to slip one past you, you know, seventh, eighth grade or so. I'm picturing that one not being very easy to say, you know, I didn't do my homework because the teacher didn't give me the sheet. I'm picturing that not working with you.
Yeah, he has no chance. No chance. And his mother is probably even better than I am at doing that. So he's got zero chance.
His poker face isn't very good either, by the way.
No, it's not. Absolutely not.
Which is a testament. He's a good kid. So because he's a good kid, he doesn't have a good poker face.
No, he's a good kid.
Well, let me ask you this before we get to the canine aspect of your job and what you're doing now. With the climate that there is in some places around law enforcement, or the perception there is in some places around law enforcement nowadays, if you were 23 right now, would you want to be a police officer again?
Boy, that's a heck of a good question. I would probably say yes. And the reason is because it brought me to where I'm at today. And my passion is really training dogs. And without becoming a police officer and then getting a police dog and going through that whole part of my career, I wouldn't be where I am today. So I would say yes.
Now, educate me on this a little bit. So you had Canine Stoney. You guys are in the Canine Hall of Fame in Vermont. You guys, but the record for the most busts, I think, you have in state history. Is that true, too?
Most drug fines.
Most
yeah.
drug fines in history. So when you became a cop, you know, your first year, did you instantly become a canine handler? Or is that something, maybe the state didn't even have canines then? I'm not sure.
No, they did have canines. The program had started in 1979 down at the police academy, and I started my career in 1995.
Okay.
So you have to become, it depends on the department, but in my department, you had to be a police officer on the road for 3 years before you became eligible, and then a lot of times an opening wouldn't occur. Burlington Police has two police dogs, and those dogs, you know, they live 8, 9, 10 years sometimes, so those positions don't come open that often. I was lucky enough in my fourth year, an opening came up, and I put in for it, and I was lucky enough to get Stoney, and the rest is history.
Is that because, did you want that because it would be another good tool for you to become a better police officer, or because you're a dog lover, or a little bit of both?
I'd say a little bit of both, but that's kind of when I started to tap into something that I didn't know was even there yet. You know, my passion to train dogs. I kind of fell upon it, but it was always there, but that's kind of when the tip of the iceberg started to be, chipped away. And, you know, my first 3 or 4 years on the road, I would spend a lot of time talking and interviewing the current police, canine handlers that we had. And it was obvious to them and to everybody that, you know, that was what I wanted to do. So when I was lucky enough to get that police dog, that was kind of my dream job. Hmm. And it was a blast for sure.
How long does it take to train a canine?
So you have to go to the academy it's about 4 months to train the basic skills of patrol, which means tracking, building searches, the protection work. And then you have to go an additional month and a half or so for the drug work. and then you have to go back to the academy at least twice a month to do regular training because it's a perishable skill, really. And if you don't go back and constantly train, the dog's, you know, going to lose their ability. So, but really, if you're a good police canine handler, you're really trying to work your dog every single day, whether it's an on-duty deployment or it's training in between calls and stuff like that.
If you work 5 hours a day, or 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, a traditional 40-hour week, I'm sure it goes longer than that in a lot of weeks, but if you worked a traditional 40-hour week, could the canine work with you every hour of the week, or do they need more of a break than you do?
Yeah, so the dog is in the back of the car, and so the dog goes to work with you. You know, when the police dog is home, they're just a regular house dog.
Yep.
And a member of the family. So when I went to work, and we had take-home cruisers. So when I went to work, Stoney went to work with me. So he went to work with me, you know, 40-plus hours a week. You know, a lot of times he was in the back of the car, and it was air-conditioned, and he had water, and, you know, he lived a good life.
Yeah.
But there were shifts where, you know, he would come in and out all day long, and we might be doing a track in one town, and then after that we might go to another town and do a drug search, and then we might, you know, at the end of the shift end up doing something else. So it's every day was different, and every day was, you know, just a fun day where my goal was to use my dog every single day if I could. And I was lucky enough to be in Burlington because it was busy and there were a lot of canine deployments to be had. So every single year that I had Stoney, which was 9 years, we were the most used dog in the state of Vermont. And part of that was because I worked for Burlington and there was a lot of activity. But the other part of that was I really pushed him really, really hard and pushed myself.
When your dog is off duty and you're at home and it's part of the family, is it easy to turn off the switch for the dog? I mean, can the dog go from high-intensity situations to cuddling on the couch while you watch TV?
They probably transition like the human does. So when I came home from shift, it depends on what happened that shift as far as how long it would take me to kind of decompress. You know, if at the end of my shift I had just had to break up a bar fight, let's say, you know, I'd be kind of jacked up for maybe an hour or two, and it would take me a while to fall asleep. And, you know, the dog is the same way. Where if we had a slow shift and we kind of eased into the end of the shift, it would be less time to kind of decompress. So I would say that the dog, you know, he probably kind of masked what I did from my downtime. And, you know, every night was kind of different. But I would say usually took, you know, sometimes half hour to an hour to, once I get home, to just kind of relax. And he kind of did the same thing.
Dogs are not cheap. I've learned. We have a dog. We have a rescue dog. Dogs are not cheap. Do you have to pick up the bill for toys, treats, food, et cetera, or does the police department pick that up for you?
The police department pays for everything as long as that dog is a certified police dog. So when Stoney retired, I had to assume all the costs after that. But I had a really long, long time when I could walk into the store. And, you know, you want to be smart about it. You totally are very cognizant that the taxpayers of the department of the town are paying for your dog and everything. So, you know, you wanted to be kind of frugal as far as what you went and bought, but you also wanted to take care of your dog. So you wanted to have good equipment, but you wanted to take care of it, and you wanted to buy toys on occasion, but you weren't going to go into a store and buy, you know, 10 toys a week. That would just be a waste of taxpayer money. So I was always very cognizant of what we were getting, but we also had top-notch equipment because, you know, I always had the attitude that I wanted my dog to be the best, so I wanted him to have the best equipment, and so that's kind of how we did things.
In my complex, I know there is a police dog in my complex, and we'll see him walking, and, you know, everyone will want to pet a dog because it's a dog, and the officer will say, no, he can't because he's a police dog. Can a police dog socialize with the rest of the world, or is it too risky?
It depends on the dog. So the handler has all of the say in that situation. So I was lucky because Stoney was very social, and we did a lot of demonstrations and would go into elementary schools and, you know, nursing homes and stuff like that. And I had the type of dog that, you know, a little 6-year-old kid could come up and give a hug to, and I had no worries at all that anything bad would happen. But some handlers have dogs that are a little bit edgier. So, you know, they have to be a little bit smarter as far as where the dog is and what the dog is doing. So I was fortunate enough to have just a great dog that was very social and loved everybody. But at a moment's notice, we could turn that switch and go into police mode if we had to.
Have you had to wear, like, the giant steel glove or anything in the field where the dog comes and bites on you? And have you had to play that role before?
Oh, I do it all the time still. I have a bite suit in my closet at my business. I have bite sleeves. I deal with a lot of aggressive dogs. And, yeah, I still do it to this day. You know, that's to me, that's the enjoyable part of my job.
Why are German Shepherds the best dog for canines? Or are they not anymore? Because I see a lot of other places that are using other kinds of breeds now.
Yeah, it's kind of like the new debate in the field. But German Shepherds are kind of like the best all-around dog. They're kind of a jack-of-all-trades. You know, they're very smart, and you can train a German Shepherd to do very well in all of the aspects of police work. You know, you probably have seen Belgian Malinois are more popular now. And, you know, when I was a police canine handler, I would say most of the dogs in the program were German Shepherds, and now it might be maybe 80% and, you know, a larger percentage of Belgian Malinois. Well, Belgian Malinois are very, very good at the protection part of police work. So when they bite a sleeve, it's really, really hard, and they hit it really hard. So that can be really impressive. But sometimes when you transition them over to do tracking or drug work, there are some that do really good work, but there are some that have a little bit more difficulty with it. So they're more of a specialty dog, and, you know, a lot of labs are used for drug work and stuff like that. So I would say, me personally, if I had to pick a breed to be a police dog, I would pick a German Shepherd, because I'm kind of tried and true. I have 5 dogs, 2 are German Shepherds now. I love the breed. I also respect Belgian Malinois, and I respect any other breed that's a working breed. But I think they're best overall at doing all the tasks out there, and they've been used for, you know, over 100 years worldwide, and they just have a great reputation, and they're super smart and super trainable.
Is there any weather that you can't use a canine in? I mean, I don't know, 95 and humid, I can't imagine would be fun for a big dog full of hair. I can't imagine that negative 20 would be fun for a dog.
So I would rather have cold than heat. You know, I can tell you, I did a track once when it was, with a wind chill, it was negative 50.
Oh.
And it was a short track of somebody that had crashed, and they were a DUI suspect, and they ran off, and it, you know, it was only a couple hundred yards, and we found the guy. But I think most dogs would prefer cold over heat. August was always the most difficult month of the year up here to work, because, you know, that's our hottest month.
Yeah.
And the dogs kind of lose their energy really quickly, and you have to, you know, give them a lot of water, and you kind of have to be smart. But, you know, when it's fall or when it's wintertime and it's not too cold, you know, 25 degrees out, they can go forever.
So now we transition, you retire, you go to the Hall of Fame with Stoney. What did that mean to you to be in the K-9 Hall of Fame?
It's just a great honor. You know, it kind of justified all the hard work that I did with Stoney. I really pushed myself every single day, and I pushed myself every month and every year. My goal at the end of the year, you know, when I look back, was, okay, I can do better. I can do better than last year. So I just really have this internal fire that really brought me to a high level. And I was lucky enough to have a great dog to be paired with. But really, my work ethic was pretty insane, for sure. And that's probably more credit to my parents than anything else. So it meant a lot. It was an award that means a lot to me. And I'm very proud of that.
I live in Essex. My girlfriend and I donated to the Essex Police Department. They had their first canine recently within the last year, Canine Wes. So what does it mean to you to see other departments around Vermont bringing in their own canine programs?
I think it's great. I mean, I'm still an instructor through the academy, and I'm still on the canine committee, which oversees the whole program. So, you know, I think the more the merrier. They're such a great tool. They are so efficient, and probably the most important part of the dog program that nobody realizes unless you're in the program is the deterrent factor.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
Just having a police dog on a scene, like say a fight scene or something like that, and you have a dog that's, you know, barking and kind of letting everybody know that they're there. People really behave more often when there's a police dog on scene, so it can save, police officers from getting injured. It can save citizens from getting injured. So the whole deterrent factor in preventing crime from happening just by the mere presence of the dog is huge. But you really can't, you know, you can't quantify that in any statistics. So it's kind of like the hidden reason to have a police dog.
Now, I don't know enough about this, so I'm going to kind of fumble my way through my question then and have you correct me on this. You've got a dog. You and Stoney are tracking. You find drugs. The dog then smells the drugs. There's a point where there's too much proximity to drugs, right? Because I've heard about, you know, police departments that have Narcan units, which help reverse the effects of drugs on dogs. I mean, is that a very real fear that you have when you have a canine?
Absolutely. Yeah. Stoney, actually, we had a drug search once where, you know, a lot of the places we go into are not nice places, and there's a lot of needles, and, you know, sometimes there can be drugs just out on a desk or on a table. So as a canine handler, you really want to keep a tight leash. You want to keep your eyes open, and you want to be looking for that. You know, the first thing that we're taught when we go into a room or a scene is to make the scene safe and make sure there's nothing in there that's going to hurt our dog. But sometimes we don't catch it all. So Stoney had an incident where he alerted on top of a bureau, and before I could take him away, he had snorted a little bit of cocaine.
Wow.
And, so he did not enough to really affect him, but it was just a little pinch, and it kind of gave me, gave me a warning that I'd have to be a little bit more careful there. But yeah, it's a real danger. There's police dogs that are killed because they inject some drugs and it kills them. But I think as a canine handler, you're very aware of that kind of stuff.
So now you are the owner of Thin Blue Line Canine, where your motto is obedience is our business. What's it like training a house dog versus training a police dog? What are the differences?
So there are vast differences. When I train a police dog, you know, which I still do on occasion, you're kind of in a, it's almost like I wouldn't say a secret world, but it's a different world. Like only so many people have access to that world, and only so many people know, like, you know, how to train a police dog and what we do on a daily basis and stuff like that. So, you know, I feel very privileged still to be part of the program and to be an instructor and to be teaching these new handlers, you know, how to do everything that we're teaching the dogs to do. So I still pinch myself and when I realize, like, I'm in a great position and I have everybody that's below me that has taught me everything that I know over the years. I have three mentors, and they pretty much have laid that foundation. So I feel very privileged to be in the position I'm in when I'm training the police dogs. And when I am doing my business, I am going into people's houses when they are super stressed based on their dog's behavior. Sometimes I really feel like the behavior of a dog is causing so much stress that it is damaging the relationship of the humans. And sometimes I think that people are on the verge of divorce based on their dog, you know, maybe biting another dog or biting a person or whatever the case. And so I feel a lot of satisfaction by going into that environment and helping resolve those issues and seeing the stress relief on the human part and almost like saving marriages almost by changing the behavior in the dog.
What is the most common thing that you get called for or the most common correction that a family will want you to make with their dog?
That's a good question. I would say healing is a big problem. Like a lot of people take their dogs out for a walk, and we all can drive through a neighborhood and we can see the dog taking the human for a walk.
Yeah,
you know, that's a pretty common problem. And also like jumping up on people when someone comes to their house.
Hey, that's that's my problem with our dog.
All right. Well, we're going to talk after for sure.
Okay.
For sure. But I deal with what sets me apart from a lot of the other dog trainers in this in the county, and I at the last count there were 41 dog trainers in Chittenden County.
Wow.
That I'm competing against. So what sets me apart is my experience and my training from the academy. Nobody else really has that foundation, but my willingness to deal with the really aggressive dogs, because I'm comfortable. You know, long time ago, 21 years ago was when I first got my first bite from a police dog, and a lot of people would be fearful in that situation. And for me, it was almost like a drug. It kind of inspired me, and it kind of wowed me, and I was like, that was awesome. And I still get that feeling today when I have to put a bite suit on or a sleeve, and I have to go in and deal with a dog that's aggressive and that wants to do me harm for no reason at all. But I'm the guy that basically you send your dog to, or you come with your dog when all else has failed. And a lot of times these dogs are, you know, one incident or one day even away from being put down because of their behavior. And I have a high success rate. You know, it's not 100%, obviously, but I'm not afraid to tackle these problems, and I'm not afraid to use all of the equipment that's out there to try to find the best way to communicate to the dog that what they're doing is not okay, and what they're doing is potentially endangering their lives.
How often do you find, though, where you have an overprotective pet parent that thinks their dog is some menace, and you find out, no, it's a normal dog. Like, stop worrying.
Pretty often.
Okay, that's what I figured.
Yeah. Pretty often.
So let me ask you this, too, because this is the one that I struggle with. I've heard, and you watch TV, you watch videos, you just see other dog owners, and you see them being very, very firm with their dog and raising their voice if they need to in a stern way. I'm a big softy. I consider that to be yelling and verbally abusing the dog. And everyone tells me that I'm way too soft. The dog's just going to take advantage of you. Is that true? Is being nice a problem? Being too nice a problem?
No. I deal with all kinds of different people out there. To be a successful dog trainer, you really have to be good at communicating to people and teaching people. But really, even if you're like a softy, the key is the clear communication to your dog when they're doing something that you don't like, and also communicating to them when they're doing something you do like, which is usually after, you know, during obedience and stuff. So, just really the basic way to reprimand a dog is just a verbal no, just one time in a really deep voice. And if you just do that one time, a lot of times you can make a connection with a dog, and the dog will kind of back off and say, oh, you know, dad's not happy with what I just did. Especially if you consistently do it for any behavior that would be considered negative. So the verbal low tone no is kind of the first defense, you know, that you want to throw out there and communicate to your dog when they're doing something that you don't like, whether it's jumping up on the counter, getting in the trash, whatever the case. It's kind of like the universal way to deal with it. That's kind of the first tactic that we use.
Thin Blue Line Canine is the business. The facility has recently opened up. I know when you started a couple of years ago, you didn't have your own facility. Now you will not only go to people's houses, but you have a facility where people can come to you. Where is the facility located if people want to get in touch with you?
It's at 126 Yance Hill Road. That's Yantz. Hill is H-I-L-L Road. And, yeah, so we've had our facility open for a year now, and it's a really awesome place. It's on a day like today, it's super cool in there. So I just got done with a group class. We had 10-plus dogs in the class, and we spent some time outside. And then when we got hot, we just went inside and we cooled down. And you know, the flip side of that is in the wintertime, we have a nice, warm, dry facility that's very professional, and it's a nice space to train dogs. I can train up to 12 dogs in there at a time. And we also recently opened up, I believe it's the first wilderness canine agility course in the state. I have 10 acres behind my house, all wooded, and my wife and I and my assistant, Tanya, have been working really, really hard at basically blazing a trail through the woods. It's an all-natural trail, and we've put up about 18 different obstacles, and we're going to add to that constantly. Wow. We've used only probably close to half of the land, and we're going to constantly be adding to it. So it's going to be a project that we are always working on. We're always looking to improve the business. We're always looking to push ourselves and make our product better. And really, our ultimate goal is to be number one. That's our ultimate goal, and we're going to keep working hard until we are.
Well, sometimes there are discounted packages available in the Champlain Valley Auction. So if you're doing that again and you're interested, you can always check out ChamplainValleyAuction.com when we do those, because sometimes thin blue line canine will appear in there as well. So we'll look forward to that again the next time. Tom, last question. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, how can they do so?
My phone number is 802-922-5376. You can also go to my website, thinbluelinecanine.net. All the information is on there. And I also have a business page on Facebook where I load a video usually two or three times a week where I put some dog training tips on there. I try to put some educational information on there. It's a really good place to go on a regular basis. I'm also in the process of starting a YouTube channel. We're hoping to have that going within 2 months or so, where we're going to hopefully post a segment every week. And we're just, like I said, we're just continually improving. We're working really hard. I'm lucky enough to have a business partner, my wife, who's super, super hard worker, very supportive. She and I make a great team, and I'm lucky enough to have Tanya's an assistant who is a super hard worker, and we have a support staff, and we love what we're doing. We're passionate about it, and we just want to help these dogs out there, and we just absolutely love what we're doing, and we love dealing with our clients. We feel like we have awesome clients out there.
More than 20 years in the Burlington Police Department, in the K-9 Hall of Fame, a very impressive resume. Tom, we appreciate the time, appreciate your service, appreciate all that you're doing now. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks, Brady. Appreciate it.